In this particular form of meditation, we just stop to see what's going on in terms of what's actually evident. In other words, we literally pay attention to how we feel in our bodies. We pay attention to what's bubbling up in our mind. We pay attention to how we feel. And that's often felt through, again, different points in the body. We stop and we kind of take stock. But it's not a reflective process. We're not entering into a kind of self-analysis of any kind. We're just opening up a still and quiet place to see what's happening, to see where we are at, as they say. And this, in classical Buddhist parlance, is called mindfulness, or sati. And let me just read out a passage from the Buddha. This is from the Satipatthana Sutta, the discourse on the foundations of mindfulness, or on the grounding of mindfulness. And the Buddha says, a monk gone into the forest, or to the root of a tree, or to an empty hut, sits down. Having folded his legs crosswise, set his body erect, ever mindful, he breathes in, mindful, he breathes out. Breathing in long, he understands, I'm breathing in long. Or breathing out long, he understands, I breathe out long. Now, at first sight, this looks like a rather banal thing to attend to. But it strikes me as actually a rather radical innovation into what customarily our minds are doing. They're usually running ahead at some point, or are preoccupied with a particular concern, or anxiety, or fantasy. And there's nothing intrinsically wrong with that. But we have very little space, especially in the kind of busy life we lead today, to really and genuinely stop. And although it might sound sometimes like a nice idea, if in the midst of our daily turmoil we could just somehow flick the off switch and find some inner calm or peace, clarity, when we do try to do it, unfortunately we realize that this very simple suggestion is not at all easy to follow through. And since most of us here are familiar with meditation practice, you probably know what I mean. You sit down on your cushion and you consciously bring your attention to a particular point, be it the breath or a visualized object or the words of a prayer or a mantra. And once, as long as the novelty effect is still there, we can do this quite well. But generally, after a minute or two or three, we find ourselves taken elsewhere, quite involuntarily. Particularly those of us who are used to maybe being on retreat or something, it's rather galling at times to find how little command we have over the innermost workings of our life. We try to just sit still and watch the breath, which sounds pretty straightforward, but we discover that when in doing that, it feels sometimes as though we trigger a kind of a reaction that makes us realize we'd rather do anything than sit still and watch the breath. We become aware of how the organism almost seems primed to be busy, to be elsewhere, to not be centered in the actual sensory experience that we're having right now. We seem to be conditioned to be running ahead of the game. So the practice of mindfulness is in many ways counteracting that inbuilt instinctive tendency. I suspect that tendency has its roots in biological survival, but I think it's exacerbated by a culture that gives so much importance to being busy, getting things done, achieving this, and so forth and so on. So we're up against, as it were, two counter-movements. The instincts of our own neurobiological behavior, and also the habits of the sort of cultural conditioning that is prevalent in the kind of modern society such as ours. I don't want to lay too much of the blame on modernity, because I don't think the Buddha would have been making these points 2,500 years ago if similar problems hadn't beset people then. I suspect we're really, I think, confronting something very much to do with the human condition. But I do feel, nonetheless, that in modern society, we tend to exacerbate that tendency towards busyness and tension and stress, as we call it now. And we don't seem to have cultivated strategies of behavior that somehow resist or point to other possibilities of being in this world. And that, I think, is what the practice of meditation, particularly the practice of mindfulness, promote. And if you haven't read it, there's a very, very good book that's just been published by Tim Parks, who's a novelist and a translator and academic in Italy, called Teach Us to Sit Still. And it's a wonderful story. Not only is it very beautifully written, it also, I think, explores exactly the kinds of issues I've just been mentioning. This is a memoir of a man's coming to terms with his own dukkha, his own suffering, which starts with chronic prostate pain. And it's the story of how he tries to deal with this through medical interventions, through different therapies, shiatsu at some point. And then at the end, towards the end of the book, he finds himself drawn to doing mindfulness meditation on a retreat in Italy. And it's one of the best accounts I've read of how, without any reference to Buddhism or religion or the particular things that I might be talking about this afternoon, he finds, through his own trial and error, exercises and practices that actually help transform his relationship to pain. So, I'm not going to mention this again, but I would very much recommend this book. It's in paperback. You can get it in any Waterstones. It's actually selling quite well. So the practice of mindfulness on the most immediate level is the practice of stopping and looking. Stopping and looking. And as we find through the day, whether we're sitting or walking, we'll endlessly, in all likelihood, find ourselves one moment watching our breath, which is what I'm going to suggest we start with. And then, without being aware of it, suddenly finding ourselves not aware of the breath, or the body, or the moment, but caught up in some story about the future or the past, or just some often quite mindless sort of free association thought. And when we notice that, then we remind ourselves, come back to the breath. And we start again. We stop, and we start again. And we look, and we pay attention. And the practice, the training, if you wish, is the continuous returning to where we are. In some ways, it's all about just coming back. Coming back to the body, coming back to the sensations in the body, coming back to the breath, coming back to how we feel, and just being with that, and cultivating over time a greater focus and concentration, which assists us in becoming more still, more quiet within ourselves. But also, and this is where the idea of vipassana or insight comes in, using that still space to attend more carefully to what is actually taking place in an utterly non-judgmental way. We pay attention to what we feel, and it might be that when we stop, we actually realize that the core of our emotional self, there may be a knot of anxiety or pain of some kind. Something we realize perhaps we're in flight from, that all of our busyness is often a strategy to avoid or to escape something we find very difficult to be with. But in this meditation, we just come back to that, and we try to be with it in the sense of simply saying, yes, this is my life right now, this is how I feel. And trying to embrace that experience rather than, in a way, deny it and substitute it with some other kind of distracted activity. So again, something we're doing which is both very simple, and the practice is really very simple, but it's not easy, it's not difficult, and I think it's not difficult because it's difficult because we're kind of going against the stream, as the Buddha put it. We're going against the flow of conditions that habitually drive our thinking, our emotions, our whole involvement with life. So that's the practice. But I'd like to also read a passage from the early canon, where the Buddha puts another slight slant on mindfulness as well. This is from the Anguttara Nikaya, the numerical discourses. What is the power of mindfulness? The Buddha asked rhetorically. Here, monks, the disciple is mindful. He is equipped with keen mindfulness and full awareness. He remembers well and keeps in mind what has been said and done long ago. Now, some of us might find that last sentence a bit odd. I think that in the way mindfulness has been presented, particularly in Europe and America in the last years, it's been stressed very much that it is about living more fully in the present moment. And in fact, what I've just said to you in the last 20 minutes has basically been giving that pitch. And on a practical level, that, I think, is a very important part of it. And in the first part of the Buddha's definition here, a noble disciple is mindful, he is equipped with keen mindfulness and full awareness. That's the first part. But he remembers well and keeps in mind what has been said and done long ago. So what's that about? Now, if you were a native Pali reader, of which there aren't any, because Pali is their language, but if you, let's say, spoke Sanskrit or something, you would be aware that the word we translate as mindfulness, sati, or in Sanskrit, smriti, also means, in fact more commonly means, to remember. If any of you have been to Delhi, you might have visited what's called the Gandhi Smriti. A Smriti is the Sanskrit version of sati, or mindfulness, and the Gandhi Smriti is the Gandhi Memorial. Memorial, of course, being memory. a place where we go to remember and recollect something of importance or value. The Gandhi Smriti is at the place where Gandhi was assassinated, in the Birla house in New Delhi. So when you go to the Gandhi Smriti, you recollect, you recall the life of this man, something that, as it says here, has happened a long time ago. But you don't do that if you admire Gandhi out of some dry historical interest. But because you recall the message of that man's life and what he stood for, the principles of non-violence, of political activism coming out of a non-violent perspective, and so on. So recollection, or being mindful, and again we would use that in English, we are mindful of Gandhi's life, is not just about being fully in the present moment, but it is also about recalling something that is of value and importance to us. And I think if we are to develop the idea of mindfulness a little bit further, if you think about it, simply to be good at staying for a long time watching your breath is not in itself meaningful. I mean, anyone could do it, I suppose. What we often forget when we do these practices is the reason why we do them. If, and I'm sure many of you have had this experience, you go on a meditation retreat, say at a house or somewhere, and you come back home and then you're with your friends or family and they say to you, well, what do you get out of doing all this? And I doubt very much you say, oh, well, it's incredibly interesting just to watch your breath. You should try it sometime. No, it's more. There's far more to it than that. You watch the breath because it's a means whereby to embody and bring into being. And bring into being is actually the literal translation of a word that's often translated as meditation. To bring into being an awareness of values and of ideals, I think, that really matter to you. The practice of mindfulness is a way whereby to embody your deeper values. And if you are a Buddhist, then that would refer back to the primary figures of that tradition. If you're a Christian, it would refer back to the life of Christ. And so when the Buddha's talking about things that have been said and done long ago, then I think he's pointing to the fact that when we are mindful, we're not just performing a clinical task of observation of our breathing, but we're actually employing a strategy that will hopefully bring to mind or will embody the values of the tradition or of the teacher or the teaching that we feel connected in some way. So to be mindful is to be mindful of what one aspires to be. Let me take an example. Two young monks in Thailand, let's say, are walking down the street and they see a bar on the side of the road, and one of them says to the other, come on, let's pop into that bar. And the other monk will say, no, 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 we must be mindful of who we are. We must be mindful that we are monks. Now that doesn't mean to just remember that we took a certain set of vows at a certain point in time, but it's to be mindful of the kind of person we are aspiring to be, both in terms of our own sense of personal integrity, and also, equally, in terms of how we manifest that identity in our social world as a monk. That it stands for something. And so in this regard, I think we can expand the idea of mindfulness to really be a way of being present with what is happening, yes, But we are doing that because it somehow helps us acknowledge and recall and remember what actually matters most to us in our lives. So I'd like to leave that point here. But perhaps through the day, we might consider the idea of mindfulness a little bit more widely in terms of how it can, in a way, have quite a strong moral dimension. Which is in some Buddhist traditions, particularly in the Indian Mahayana tradition, mindfulness is spoken of very much as a part of one's ethical practice, to recall one's virtues one aspires to recall one's commitments, one's values, that somehow frame and give meaning to why one sits still and watches one's breath. Let's just stand up for a minute, those of you who are sitting on the ground. We're going to continue with a period of meditation.
And can you hear me at the back? Remember too that this practice is not just about sitting down. We're going to be doing walking, but also in periods like this when we're just stretching our legs and standing, or when we're sitting down and having lunch, or when we're resting. If throughout this day we can continually try to keep coming back to our bodies, to our feelings, to what matters to us, our values, and holding that in a broader sense of mindful attention. So again, if you're sitting cross-legged particularly, you might like to just sort of flex your knees, rotate your hips, shoulders, just to get the body a little bit loosened up and less tense and tight. Okay, so when you're ready, please sit down. So the rest of this morning we're going to divide our time between sitting in here and walking on the ground. And I'll explain the walking meditation when that time comes. So for those of you who haven't sat before, just to repeat, to find a posture in which you are physically at ease and comfortable and your back is upright. You can slightly incline your head downwards. Maybe half shut your eyes, or shut your eyes if you find it distracting with too much to see. And then just let your attention come to rest on the natural rhythm of your breath. There's no right way to breathe. We're not trying to control the breath in any way at all. We're just coming to focus upon it both as an object of concentration, but also as a kind of a grounding of our awareness in our bodies, in the present moment, from which we can begin to open our consciousness in a more still and focused way on what is actually taking place in our experience now, whatever that might be. You don't have any idea of how you should be feeling. Meditation makes you blissful and relaxed. You might have this idea. Put that idea out of your mind. Just be aware of what is happening. Neither judging it as good or bad, just getting down to a very basic, honest, intimate attention to what is going on. And the breath becomes like a sort of anchor. It grounds you, it holds you, it's something to which you can continuously return and rest.